It's our crest, our coat of arms, and what it means to wear it.
Binsky will take it, tap it ahead for Nudibara, out to the neutral zone, finding Foligno.
It's when we dig deep.
Foligno's got help on the rush.
At the right moment.
And he drops it back for Dubinsky, over to Savard. He shoots and scores!
It's our blue, and out of our blue, we rise.
Head to BlueJackets.com for tickets, news, and more.
Now, the Buckeye Extra Podcast with Rob Aller, Bill Rabinowitz, and Joey Kaufman from the Columbus Dispatch.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is brought to you by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening to another week's edition of the Buckeye Extra Podcast with Joey Kaufman, Rob Aller, Bill Rabinowitz. And over the weekend, Ohio State has a schedule and maybe third time's the charm with these schedules. This is the third schedule of the season, the third season opener, and we're going to break down what the 2020 slate looks like. Rob or Bill, did you have any initial impressions of the road ahead for the Buckeyes in this new fall football season?
Yeah, I mean, Michigan, December 12th, that's just weird. Now, honestly, it's only, 3 weeks after they normally play? But
It'd be two, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, you know, the elements, stuck about weather elements, and anything can happen there.
Yeah, Michigan State's the week before in the East Lansing. And I think the last time we were there, or at least maybe it was 16 when we went. And remember when we turned the corner at the stadium and the wind hit us? And I was like, they ain't going to be throwing today. And remember JT Barrett's first pass looked like a paper airplane? So you push that back another month, and East Lansing could be interesting. Now, I don't think Michigan State is going to be very good this year, but it's still going to be the weather could be a challenge. What struck me about it is, you know, I thought it was kind of funny that Ohio State's matched up against Nebraska the first game. Those were two of the three vocal programs in terms of getting this thing started up again. And so, you know, I think if Ohio State fans could be in the stands, they'd probably give Nebraska a standing ovation. You know, Nebraska's fans are famous for treating opponents' fans very well. And I think Ohio State fans, if they were there, would do the same for Nebraska. But it's obviously a tough game for them to have to come to Columbus and play Ohio State in the opener. And then you've got Penn State. At Penn State, you don't have the whiteout crowd, which is going to be easier for Ohio State. But Penn State's, I think, the second-best team in the Big Ten. I don't know. I assume you guys agree with that, but I'd like to get your view on that. So it's an interesting start to the season.
The Nebraska game one makes sense for television in a lot of ways. I mean, those are two of the teams in the conference that have the biggest fan bases, and it should do well ratings-wise. I think it's why you see Nebraska, Penn State out of the box 1-2. I think some of this was done with a lot of television consideration, because that's why they're playing nine games and not just a Big Ten title game, but the deal with the corresponding seeds in week nine.
I think if you're Nebraska, the way to spin it is, I'd rather play Ohio State early than mid or late when they kind of can get going. I mean, the first game, you know, rust and who knows, a lot of things can happen in a first game where you just, and that probably makes the margin of error a little smaller, I would think. I mean, at least you can try to convince your players that if you're Scott Frost that, hey, we get them right out of the chute, and let's make the most of it. I mean, I don't know if you guys agree with that. Again, it's how you can spin it. You can spin it any way you want, but I don't think it's necessarily the worst thing in the world if you're Nebraska.
Well, if you know you're going to play Ohio State at some point, yeah. But, you know, Nebraska, if you're Nebraska, okay, you got stuck with Penn State and Ohio State as your crossovers. And, you know, people there are thinking that Big Ten is out to get them. You know, it's ripe for conspiracy. It's good talk radio stuff. I have no idea if there's any truth to it or not. So I think Rutgers was going to be would have been the third game if they had stuck with a 10-game schedule. So, you know, Nebraska, you know, everyone thought they'd be better last year under Scott Frost in year two, and they weren't. But Adrian Martinez is a quality quarterback. He didn't have a great year last year. They lost J.D. Spielman, though, I believe. That's Rick Spielman's son. I believe he transferred out. I should have checked that, but I think that's the case. Look, Nebraska is not Nebraska of old, as we all know. But there is still some mystique to that name. Would you agree?
A little, maybe.
A little? That's all you're going to give it?
the ship has maybe sailed. I mean, just based on performance over the last, how many years? Are we getting close to a decade now since?
Yeah, they joined in 2000.
When did Bo Pelini leave?
Oh, that's been maybe 4 or 5 years.
No.
Well, Mike Riley was the one. It was a disaster.
He was like 2 years, right?
Yeah. Pelini, it's been at least 3 years, I would think.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was going to be 5 or more. Anyhow, and they weren't great under him, but at least they were, you know, respectable. I don't know, Joey, what's your take as somebody who kind of grew up in the West? What was the rep of Nebraska then compared to what you see today?
Nebraska came out to the Rose Bowl in 2001 and then lost infamously to Miami in that beatdown. And that was notable because they had 90% of the stadium packed and there were no Miami fans and they got beat. But it was, I mean, Nebraska, I feel like ever since that really game, they haven't been the same. And for 20 years, we've talked about, is this going to be the year for Nebraska? And it's, are they going to revive what they were in the 90s for the most part? It's been interesting for Nebraska to come out and their reaction, I guess, to the Big Ten schedule is they've been displeased, as Bill mentioned. They lose out on playing Rutgers from the Big Ten East, and they're going to play Ohio State. So their schedule is tough from their eyes, but I don't know. This is a mighty program, and they're begging for an easier schedule. It's weird.
You know what's kind of weird? Speaking of that, you mentioned that Miami game. Nebraska's never been the same. Neither's Miami, right?
Not since the next year.
Right. I'm just
when they played Ohio State. Yeah.
You know, Miami is kind of, they're asking the same question to Miami. Yeah, it's not Big Ten, but it's just similar. Like, when is this the year the Canes are back? The Canes are back, blah, 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 you know, and they haven't been back. So –
for the record, Bo Pelini's last year at Nebraska was 2014.
Yeah, okay. So 5 years.
Yeah.
6 years.
I guess before we get into more Nebraska talk, I guess we will get into more Ohio State talk as well. But let's hear a quick word from our sponsor and get back into it.
At Rosati Windows, staying competitive is really pretty easy because everything they do is personally inspected and done locally right here in Columbus, Ohio. They are a one-stop shop from the sales force to manufacturing of your windows in their 60,000 square foot facility to the installers and then the follow-up inspections. Keeping it local and adding the personal touch. That's what has people constantly recommending Rosati Windows to their neighbors, family, and friends.
And we're back. Thanks for listening in to this week's podcast. Robbie, you had a column in the paper this week that echoed Urban Meyer's sentiment that this was an easy schedule and certainly the folks and the odds makers don't disagree. Ohio State's over-under for wins is 8.5, and they're going to play 9 games, including the conference championship week. Do either of you see any sort of trap game on the schedule or any sort of spot where they could – that would be a sand trap? I mean, they don't play Wisconsin as a crossover game, and they also drop Iowa, and Purdue is 2 crossover games. So where, if any, do you see a point in which they might be a slip-up or – something to navigate?
Well, I agree with Urban mainly because you could have thrown any schedule, I think, at Ohio State and it would have been easy, relatively speaking, because they're just that, I think they're that powerful, at least potentially. I don't know if Bill agrees, but, you know, really the only game that really jumps out, he's already spoken about Michigan State with the weather there, but, you know, at Penn State, it's not a whiteout, but, you know, looking at scores, I mean, it was a pretty close game last year in Ohio Stadium with an Ohio State team that was one of the best ever to that point. So, you know, Penn State's always dangerous. I just think Ohio State will win and, you know, nothing would shock me. Let's put it this way. If Ohio State doesn't run the table, it's going to be a huge disappointment. They're going to take some major abuse because, A, they pushed for this season to get back on track. They pushed for it to happen in October, which I agree with. I think it should have been in October, and it is. But it'll come back to bite them if they don't go 9-0. It's just the way it is because they sort of assumed, or at least it kind of came off. Maybe it got maybe the fan base or maybe the national media or whoever kind of saw it this way, that this was like just, you know, roll out the red carpet for the Buckeyes because they're going to be in the playoff. Some people have claimed that the whole reason the Big Ten and the presidents voted to return and return as early as they did, as they wanted Ohio State in the playoff. So there's sort of this assumption that Ohio State will be in. I think they will be in.
Well, you look at the schedule, and realistically, the game at Penn State is by far the biggest challenge. I mean, I'm not going to discount Michigan, because Michigan is not on Ohio State's level. It's clear that Ohio State's dominated them, but I don't think you can look at Michigan and say that's a lock. I just think that'd be foolish to say that. But you look at the rest of the games. Rutgers, no way. At Maryland, no way. Indiana, now Indiana's good for somewhat of a scare, and I'll give them props because my son goes there. But in terms of beating Ohio State, you know, at Illinois, at Michigan State, first year coach rebuilding that roster, and then Michigan. You know, I don't want to say anytime that a team should go undefeated or it's a, you know, undefeated or bust. I just think that's a tough thing to do. It's slightly different with a 9-game schedule. And what's going to be interesting is, let's say Ohio State, let's say there is a game or game or two where they don't play because of COVID, and they're 7-0. For the sake of argument, what if Penn State is one of those games? And then you've got the reverse argument you normally have with SEC teams, because SEC teams they play 8 regular season or 8 league games. You know, Alabama play the Citadel or somebody like that the week before they play Auburn. You know, it'll be interesting to see if Ohio State has clearly an easier schedule than an SEC team. Maybe there are two one-loss SEC teams. That could get real interesting.
Here's the problem, I think, with in some ways with trying to predict this season or look at these games on paper is I'm like both of you guys, where I would go through the schedule and write W just next to every game and pick them to go 8-0. But what happens if a position group, all of a sudden you get a couple COVID cases? Right. What happens if Justin Fields or another critical player were to pick up COVID? You miss 3 games. You have to sit out 21 days. Some of the way this could work is you could have your team dramatically reshaped because 5 guys get COVID. So that's I think the true wild card in the mix here is if there would be something catastrophic as far as the virus concerns, because what happens if you have to play Gunnar Hoke at quarterback for 3 weeks or CJ Stroud or Jack Miller? I mean, it's not that hard. It's not that difficult to imagine with the what we've seen from some of these other college teams that have gone through the first couple weeks of the season.
And that's really
what's interesting to me. You make a great point there, because, okay, let's say Justin Fields tests positive, right? He's out 3 games. Dude, if you're Ohio State, are you better off not playing those 3 games? And you just say, well,
I don't think that'd be an option unless you have enough players. You just can't field a team.
Well,
I don't think that's an option.
Why not? I mean, you just say that you don't have enough players.
Then they should be penalized for that.
Well, I know it should be, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, they would be.
I'm just curious how that would go down. These are just the questions that come up with this whole thing. There's a great unknown, but you're probably better off not playing a game than to playing a game without Justin Fields.
Well, I still think, except for Penn State and maybe Michigan, they would still be clear favorites in every game with Gunnar Hoke or even one of the freshmen, I think. I mean, I think that their talent disparity is that big. I mean, their offensive line is going to be really, really good. Their defense should be good as long as the secondary improves and you know, they hold down the fort back there. I think Ohio State can beat Rutgers with you at quarterback, Robo.
Maybe.
Well, Joey.
I would tend to agree, except, man, the quarterback position is just so important. I'm just not sure. I guess you hand off and throw, you know, safe passes. You know, I think against Rutgers, yes. But if you don't have Justin Fields against, let's say,
Penn State.
Nebraska, even maybe, it's hard to say. It's hard to first right out of the gate. I don't know. I think Joey nailed it. It's a minefield.
Yeah,
well, it's a minefield for the other team too, because Ohio State could be missing several guys, but so could the other team. It's totally unpredictable. It's already problematic to predict games on paper in the preseason and in a normal season, and now Now we're trying to predict games on paper in an abnormal season. I mean, Mike Norvell, the coach at Florida State, is going to miss last week's game where he's out with COVID. So what happens if one of your coaches is out? I mean, there's just so many challenges to navigate. It's hard to really predict or get a total feel on how things will go. And then you have the other situation too, is they haven't practiced in pads since December. This offseason has been really condensed. So not only do you have COVID issues to navigate, but our players going to be more susceptible to injuries because they haven't had the normal ramp up off season.
Look what's happening in the NFL. I mean, look at all these injuries, just the Ohio State players in the NFL, Nick Bosa and Malik Hooker. And who was the other one? Paris Campbell, and then Saquon Barkley. I mean, this has been awful.
McCaffrey.
Right. I mean, Ryan Day said on his radio show last night that depth is going to be more important than ever. And I think he's absolutely right. I mean, you have to feel like on the offensive line that you can go fully too deep and maybe even more, because not just the COVID thing, but just the injury thing. And normally, you know, they have this thing, I don't want to say down to a science, it's football and things, it's a violent sport, but they know what they're doing in terms of how to prepare for a season, the ramp up to a season. They can't do anything in pads until September 30th, at least. And then you're going to play 24 days later. That's not a ton of time when you've got to basically do everything. Get the fundamentals down, start preparing game planning stuff. It's going to be tricky. And the thing about the 21 days, that's the time that you have to be away from the program. Coming back after 21 days, you know, you haven't lifted weights, you haven't done conditioning. You're probably talking about really a 5-week thing before those guys are back to normal. So, yeah, this is going to be wild in that sense. And we talked about Ohio State going undefeated under normal circumstances. Well, these are not normal circumstances. And Ohio State has to hope, you know, they say they're being very disciplined and kind of putting themselves in a bubble. They have to do that. They really do have to do that, because if just a couple guys get it, and then with the guys they're associated with may have to sit out too, it's going to be interesting.
And Bill, you talk about the 21-day time frame. Maybe it takes them longer to recover because they're getting back into playing shape. I mean, we're also assuming they're going to be in a 21-day quarantine and asymptomatic.
Right.
You could have a player who may have some slight symptoms, and you may have like the player at Indiana where you may have a heart issue, or you could be somebody with running a fever. I mean, where you're going to lose weight. You're going to drop 10 pounds, because these aren't just people who are sick and then coming back into doing everyday life and going to a 9-to-5 job. I mean, they're coming back and asked to play football at a tremendous amount of speed and athletic prowess. So that will be something to navigate as well.
Yeah, that brings up an interesting issue of should they come back. I found it very interesting that Justin Fields said, well, if you're going to miss 3 games, you might as well sit out the season. You know, that didn't get a lot of play, but he did say it. And on that, A, interesting, and B, you know, putting a guy back out there after he's had COVID and is sick and that whole thing, and that does not seem like a real strong endorsement of safety to me, but just from a health standpoint, for, you know, how can you be ready if you sit out 3 weeks? How fast do they work you back in, and can you be worked back in? These are the pressures. These are the political pressures that are at play, and this is obviously the most intriguing season we've ever seen.
And we talked about before or after the Big Ten canceled, you know, not so much that they were wrong to not play football, but just we questioned the timing of it and the lack of transparency and things like that. It's still an open question as to whether they can actually get through the whole season. That's not been answered and can't be answered right now. We just have to wait and see. You know, look, baseball has been pretty successful. You know, they had some bumps early. The NFL has been very successful. NHL, very successful. NBA, very successful for the most part. So it can be done. But, you know, this is not a bubble situation. These are college campuses. And, you know, they're not in the bubble wrap, as you asked Justin Fields about. It's going to be trickier. And you're dealing with a younger age group, and they tend to not be as careful because they feel like they're invincible.
Do you think it's do you think there's any way they could build a bubble just for Justin Fields?
If they could, they would.
is that against the NCAA rule book? Is there something in there about impermissible benefits as far as bubble construction?
Or I think he lives alone. I'm not sure about that. I think he lives alone. But yeah, I've got a story on Jonathan Cooper that's going to run in tomorrow's paper, and he gave a speech to his teammates back in the summer. I think it was actually before they canceled on August 11th, that just begged them to do the right thing and be smart about everything they were doing in terms of protecting themselves against COVID. That's got to be their mantra. I mean, they've got to be just, you know, as Cooper said, you know, can't go to bars, can't do this, can't do that. All the things you're supposed to do, they have to live by that because they just do not want to jeopardize it for their teammates.
It's funny because this came up last year too, and it's one of the ironies in all this, but remember when Justin Fields was asked at the press conference last season how he was enjoying campus or Columbus?
Yeah, right.
He said he hadn't been to campus yet. He just lived in his apartment and took online classes and went to the Woody and came home and watched Netflix. And I think a lot of people took notice of that as how siloed college athletes had become. And geez, don't you want college athletes to be more immersed in student life? Now in 2020, that's the ideal model behavior where you want all your football players to be doing that. It's quite a time we're living in.
He was ahead of his time.
Trendsetter. But seriously, you do want to have taking online classes as much as possible and avoiding the general student population as much as possible. It is an odd deal for college sports and amateur athletics.
Let's face it, the coaching staff would love that. They'd do that every time. I think bubble sort of can be created because my guess is almost all. And who knows where their congregate apartments, or they all sort of been clustered and bubbled, you know, in one spot.
The fact that college sports has become more siloed does help them in some ways because they can spend really a significant amount of time at the Woody Hayes facility and at their own apartment. And the place is spacious enough where you can stay there in your off hours with your teammates who are being tested every day. And that is a generally safer situation than just rolling around through campus or going to a non-football player's house.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, we're not going to be at the Woody all year, I wouldn't think. You know, the media is going to be doing all of our stuff from home on Zoom calls, and you know, we'll be at the stadium. I think, you know, it'll be, the media number will be reduced, but I think we're there. I hope so. But it's going to be a different situation. We're not going to have face-to-face interviews this year. Everything's going to be remote. It's going to be a different world this year.
How do we know that there just aren't beds set up at the Woody? That we've not been there. I mean, maybe it's like a barracks. Yeah, they've got all the beds set up in the practice facility there, and nobody's allowed to leave. And, you know, that's a pretty good bubble.
Well, I do have a little bit of a spy who works at the Fawcett Center who has been able to inform me when Ohio State is practicing. Unfortunately, my wife doesn't know any about football and wouldn't know if she were in the huddle. I'm not sure that she would know what they were doing. But she can see the tops of their helmets sometimes when she walks out of the faucet where she works.
How does your wife feel about you revealing her as a source?
I didn't say she was a source. She's not a source.
That sounded like a source to me.
Well, that's not Joey. Maybe an uninformed source.
Respecting your insiders.
Back that one up, Bill.
I don't think Ryan Day has anything to worry about in terms of my wife being a spy for the she wouldn't know what she's watching.
Oh, he worries. He worries about, you know, anybody that walks by.
Well, if that's his biggest worry, he's in good shape.
I'm sure when he reached this point of the podcast, he was relieved that you clarified that, Bill.
If he's listening to the podcast, he's got, well.
I don't think I'll make it this far into the podcast.
We've kind of broken down the schedule and some of the challenges for this year. Speaking of, and Billy, you mentioned media access too. We're recording this Tuesday afternoon, so before Ohio State's evening media availability on on Tuesday, but we're going to start hearing from players and coaches, and we're not going to really be watching camp because the open viewing periods are no longer a thing this year because of COVID and all that. But are there any questions either of you have or subplots or things that you would are going to be following or paying close attention to in the weeks before we supposedly have a football season?
Well, I think the obvious one is the secondary. You know, how do they replace three starters back there, three really good starters back there? That's probably the biggest question they have. Now that Wyatt Davis is back, the offensive line looks pretty solid. I would expect Harry Miller to play left guard, but that's a competition. I think the tackle spots, you know, Thayer Munford's a three-year starter, and you figure he's safe at left tackle. At right tackle, you've got Nicholas Petit-Frere, but you've also got Dwan Jones. You've got Paris Johnson Jr. That's going to be interesting. You know, I think backup quarterback, honestly, and the running backs. You know, how is Master Teague really recovered from the Achilles injury? What does Trey Sermon, the transfer from Oklahoma, give you? Who emerges at wide receiver behind Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson? I think those are questions. There are questions.
Yeah, oddly enough, the delay in the start of a season has allowed Ohio State to get its backfield in order in a lot of ways, because you have two pretty good running backs there, as you mentioned, Bill and Trey Sermon and Master Teague. Well, Master Teague was coming off an Achilles injury, and Trey Sermon's coming off a knee injury, which as running backs, those are pretty important body parts to have healthy. And now they get a few more weeks to get into the swing of things. And Master Teague's dad did tell me that if they had played the first week of September, he would have been able to play at Illinois. How many carries he would have maybe gotten or how close to 100% or how comfortable he would have felt probably remains to be seen. But and it's pretty good for somebody who hurt his Achilles back in March.
Right. I'm curious about the pass rush. You just don't replace Chase Young, right? So – yeah, they're loaded, they're always good, but you don't always have a Chase Young. I mean, you know, so we'll see how that plays out. Who's going to step in and replace him? I mean, who's the leading candidate there, guys?
Well, Jonathan Cooper is back.
But he's already there. What about
Tyreek Smith, Zach Harrison. You know, Zach Harrison is a five-star guy and just unlimited potential and certainly showed – more than flashes last year. I remember there was a play he chased somebody down 30 yards downfield, pushed him out of bounds. I mean, he's a unique guy in terms of his talent, and from all accounts, is a hard worker and is a good learner and all that kind of stuff. So, Tyler Friday is another one that they like. They're going to be deep there. The middle of the line is a little shakier, I think, especially with Haskell Garrett's stat. I mean, I don't know what his status is in terms of playing. You know, he was shot in the cheek, maybe 3 weeks ago, two or three weeks ago. So, you know, that's a bit of a question, who's going to play in the middle, because Devon Hamilton had a real breakthrough year last year and became a real force. So they need to find somebody who can be disruptive in the middle.
And not just Devon Hamilton, who was really one of the unsung guys on the D-line, but Jayshon Cornell and B.B. Landers.
Right.
In some ways, Chase Young you can't replace, but in some ways they had more depth on the defensive end spots last year as well. And this year they're moving Baron Browning to outside linebacker, so somebody's going to rush the passer off the edge. I think the interior is really where I would have more of the question marks for them.
And they got, you mentioned Baron Browning at linebacker. They got tons of linebackers. It's going to be – I think the challenge is going to be working in some of the younger guys, the Taraja Mitchells, guys like that, because you have – Tuff Borland and Baron Browning and Warner back, Justin Hilliard. So you have four really veteran guys. And I think they're going to mix and match a lot, but that's a strength of that team.
Well, maybe with the amount of cold weather games that we could see this year because of the schedule going so deep into November, you might have some true Midwestern grudge matches and freezing cold. I mean, they went with that 4-4 defensive front against Wisconsin, so maybe we'll see that revived and come back to life if it ends up being an old-fashioned run-oriented game?
Yeah, I think the run game is going to be more important this year because you can only count on good weather for the first 2-3 weeks of the year. You get to mid-November in the Midwest, and again, the only kind of upper Midwest Ohio State has is in East Lansing, but now the weather's not going to be great in Maryland. It's not going to be great in Illinois. Penn State, even on Halloween, that could be a little iffy. So, Columbus is Columbus. So, yeah, I think you better have the kind of offense that can grind it out. No question about it.
Their best running back might be their quarterback, too. Let's not forget about that. I assume he's back to full health, although who knows, right? I mean,
I would assume he is. Yeah, I'm sure.
I don't know how that stuff works with a knee, right? I assume he's back to 100% or close to. But we really didn't see – I think we could all agree that last year going into the season, we thought Justin Fields would be even more of a running threat. We thought he'd run a little more just based on, you know, recent history under Urban Meyer and the quarterback. And I think I remember at the end of the season, it was like, well, we thought he'd run more. I mean, not that it was a missed opportunity by any means. It was a very good team. But, you know, then he kind of got hurt and that was it. But I think maybe he'll be worked into the offense as a runner a little more, and they may need that at least early on.
Well, he certainly can do it. I think they'd be really smart in trying to protect him as much as possible because they don't have a proven backup. So I think if they feel like if they can just win without putting him at risk, then why put him at risk?
We'll find out if Ryan Day is wised up at all because they really didn't have a capable backup last year, right?
And that wasn't his fault. I mean, that was just certain.
No. I'm not blaming anybody. Just saying that, and you remember they kept him in. Was it Penn State? What was the game?
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
They kept him in when they really didn't need to, and he got hurt. And I don't see Ryan Day. We've covered this, but I don't see Ryan Day sort of being soft in terms of pulling a guy. He just gets so caught up in the moment. And this year, they're going to have to win with style points. They're going to have to pile up the points when they can, I think, especially not knowing how many games they'll play and getting the late start. I'm just curious to see if what you said is true, whether they're going to be more careful with Justin Fields this year.
Well, I think if Ohio State goes undefeated, they're in the playoff. I don't think they need style points. I just don't. I mean, they're going to be number two probably in the country once they get back in the rankings. And they beat Penn State in week two after assuming you beat Nebraska. I don't see the next five teams having much of a shot against them. And then you got Michigan. If you just beat Michigan, that's enough.
I think it depends on how many games you play.
Well, of course.
You can be 5-0 undefeated, but that doesn't mean you're going to get in. That would be a hard call for the committee to take a team that's played five games, is 5-0, and they're one of the four when other teams are playing. Let's say everyone else plays 8, 9, 10, and Ohio State and the Big Ten plays 4 or 5. I mean, these are all just who knows. Again, this is where we are, guys, speculation and anything goes.
Well, that covers everything. We'll be back in the days to come and have more for you on the Ohio State. It should be picking up soon with players talking more frequently and more media availability as they start the ramp up to the season starting this week. Ohio State's practicing 20 hours a week, which is the normal in-season workout allotment. So there should be more news and notes around the Buckeyes. And stay tuned. We'll talk to you soon.
The Buckeye Extra Podcast is made possible by Rosati Windows, Central Ohio's number one replacement window company.
Be sure and subscribe to the Buckeye Extra Podcast in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on Stitcher.